passion for the planet, sound publishing,
the environment, health, alternative solutions.
I'm Chantal Cook. In medieval Islamic legend is the story of Layla, a Bedouin girl who was forbidden to marry her childhood sweetheart. The sweetheart went mad and wandered the desert screaming his love for her, which came out as exquisite poetry. So how did the story end, and what significance does it have today? Michael Barry is from Princeton University and is Director of Islamic Art at the Metropolitan Museum in New York, and also an expert in Middle Eastern literature.
Of course, they were never united in this life, and they became symbols of a tragic love rendered impossible by the bad relations between their respective families. They've sometimes been compared to Romeo and Juliet, but the analogy is not quite correct. In fact, the way the Islamic tradition is going to transform these characters is going to make them into two people much more akin to Dante and Beatrice, with the lady Layla becoming the source of inspiration for the longing of the poet, who will move from terrestrial love to a form of courtly love that will ultimately transfigure his lady love into the guide, the initiator. And as we will see in the most magnificent rendition of this tradition in Islamic literature by the Persian language poet Nizami at the end of the 12th century, into a metaphor for the soul's yearning to be reunited with God, except for the fact that in this case, God most explicitly takes on the female features of the lady Layla, so that even more than Beatrice, who is a spiritual guide, she becomes the divine itself. The painters in Persia, Turkey, Central Asia, and India, who will be called upon to illustrate this story, especially from the 15th century onwards, will understand it without any ambiguity and will actually show the Lady Layla sitting in majesty in the niche of prayer of a mosque as the focus of worship. And the verse illustrated by these very daring paintings is, "She uplifted the veil from over her own beauty," which becomes a metaphor for God himself, the divine force, revealing itself as visible light from the pre-eternal darkness, so that it becomes a central mystery, whereby in a civilization usually regarded as so misogynistic, nevertheless, a yearning on the part of male poets and male painters ultimately gave unto the divinity the very face of a beloved woman.
And taking that into account then, how does that change what we might understand about the Islamic faith?
It doesn't necessarily have to change your perception of social relations, especially in the periods we're talking about. In these medieval centuries, when, if anything, relations between the sexes are even harder than they are now, they were extremely puritanical. But what you have here is a movement on the part of men to overcome these barriers, and in their yearning for these female figures that are so difficult for them to be united with, except for their own wives, but otherwise the barriers, the social walls separating the sexes are so terrifyingly frustrating that these poets and these painters ended up by describing the very yearning of their souls for the love of the divine into a metaphor that transcends the yearning of these men for guiding wonderful women, so that it represents a triumph of the human spirit, if anything, over the constraints of a particular civilization.
Now, that's looking at it from the male point of view, yearning for the woman. Do we know how the women were responding to it?
It is certainly the males who imposed this system of rigid separation and male domination, the males who suffer from it, and the males who sublimate it. So there is no doubt that we're talking about poetic and artistic projections of male conceptions. If we went over to the women's side, then I would recommend what I think are the most powerful female poems of the Islamic world that I have ever read, the traditional Islamic world. They are the poems of Pashtun Afghan women of the tribes who, accepting the fact that their male folk enjoy right of death over them, the men can kill the women because the women are the receptacles of male honor, and if they swerve from the direct path, they must be put to death. And the men dominate women by holding over their heads this constant fear of death. The women transcend this pressure by, in turn, egging their menfolk on to show themselves brave in love and in battle. The women take the initiative in love affairs in which they risk far more than their lovers. They also take the initiative to insist that their menfolk show bravery in war and in battle, saying, "We live as heroines under constant fear of death. You will only deserve us if you court death and overcome the fear of death as we do." My wonderful Afghan friend who transcribed so many of these poems and then was murdered by fundamentalists in 1987 in a Pakistani refugee camp, himself insisted on the fact that these poems are not mystical. They are extremely earthy. Many of the details are extremely sensual, but it's a completely different kind of poetry seen from literally the other side of Purda, from the other side of the veil. So these great poets and these great mystics and painters that I was describing, I fully recognize and accept that they expressed a male projection in this particular situation.
That's Michael Barry from Princeton University and Director of Islamic Art at the Metropolitan Museum in New York. And there are lots more interviews available on demand at passionfortheplanet.com.
This is a Passion for the Planet Sound publication. For more information about Passion for the Planet Sound publishing, visit passionfortheplanet.com.